Gail Carver parked her car underneath the windows of her brother's flat. There were lights on inside. At least he was home. Or maybe the lights meant that Amy was there. Amy was Lucas's fiancée. She was the head makeup girl for the nearest television station, and they'd met in the course of their work. Dale climbed the front steps of the house and rang the middle bell. There was a crackle, and then Lucas's voice. "Dale, come right up." Lucas stood at the front door. Amy appeared behind him, her blonde hair a curly froth around her face. "Want a coffee?" "I'd rather have a drink," Dale said. "I've been to Plymouth today. The traffic was vile." Lucas held up a vodka bottle inquiringly. "Lovely," Dale said. "The very thing." "Why," Lucas said, pouring vodka, "don't you give up being a rep and get another job? Why don't you do something that doesn't mean all this travelling? If you want to stay in publishing, why don't you go on to the editorial side or something?" "It would mean going to London," Dale said. "I don't want to go to London." Amy came out of the kitchen holding a mug. "It's funny," she said, "the way you two always want to stick around your dad." "We don't," Lucas said. Lucas looked at his sister. "You're too skinny." Dale took a big gulp of her drink. "Things haven't been brilliant lately. First Neil walking out. And now Dad." "What about Dad?" "He's got a woman." "Come on," Lucas said. "Josie hasn't been gone a year." "Men do that," Amy said. "They can't stand being alone. So when their wives die or push off, they just grab the first one." "Dale," Lucas said, ignoring Amy, "you're making this up. Dad would tell us." "He wouldn't, if he didn't want us to know. She's called Elizabeth Brown. She's a client of Dad's. The drawings of her house are all over Dad's office. It's a minute house. It's a tiny commission." "So Dad has an unimportant client who happens to be a woman. I heard him on the phone," Dale said, "asking her to have lunch with him. There was just something about his voice. You can't hide it in your voice if you're talking to somebody special." "Dale," Lucas said, "Dad's not going to marry again. He lost Mum tragically, and Josie left him. Is a man like Dad, with two such bitter experiences, ever going to risk marrying again?" When Dale had gone, Amy went into the kitchen. On the draining board sat Lucas's and Dale's vodka tumblers. Lucas had told Amy that Dale had been absolutely devastated by their mother's death. She'd only been 5, and a very mummy-clinging 5 at that. When Tom told his children that their mother was dead, Dale had had hysterics. Lucas told Amy he would never forget it, his distraught father bending over the screaming, twisting child. Then Dale transferred her fierce affections to her father. She screamed when he wouldn't let her sleep with them. Amy wondered aloud why Tom didn't get some help with her. Lucas flinched a little. He knew what was wrong. It was Mum dying that was wrong. I guess he felt it was up to him to put it right, as far as he could. But he hasn't, Amy thought. You could look at Dale now, all got up with her smart suits and briefcase, without a hair out of place, and still see that kid kicking and screaming and scaring the hell out of her father and brother. "Won't you come in?" Matthew said, gently to Rufus. Rufus sat on the low garden wall with his back to the house and kicked his heels against it in a steady rhythm. Mutely, he declined to go indoors. "Come in," Josie had said coaxingly. He hadn't looked at her. "No, thank you." Josie had gone indoors. Rufus sensed her watching him from the sitting room. It seemed a long time until someone came out to him, so long that he was really getting quite cold. Despite the Christmas trees in the street, Rufus couldn't believe Christmas was coming. It didn't feel like Christmas away from Bath and with the prospect of Matthew's children coming. Rufus heard footsteps and then saw Matthew sitting, not speaking, about 8 feet away. Rufus hunched his shoulders. "Won't you come in?" said Matthew, after a while. Rufus said nothing. "I won't come in with you. It'll only be Mum." Rufus muttered. "What?" "It's not that." "No," said Matthew. "I don't expect it is, but it's all I can think of at the moment to help you." "Why didn't Mummy come?" "Because I offered. You looked a bit lonely."
"I like it."
"Yes," said Matthew. "Come on." Rufus sprang away from him and tore up the path to the door, slamming it behind him.
"Is this where I'm sleeping?" Claire asked.
"Yes," Josie said. It had taken her several days to get the girls' room ready. She'd laundered their duvet covers and pillowcases, bought bedside lamps and a pin board, and put down a white wool Greek rug that used to lie on the floor of Rufus's nursery and bath when he was a baby. The results were very pleasing. Matthew, who'd painted the walls and hung up dark blue curtains patterned with stars, which Josie had found in a charity shop, said the girls would be thrilled. They'd never, he said, had a room half so pretty. He'd taken Josie in his arms and kissed her, and told her she was generous. "Our first Christmas all together, and you're putting so much into it." "I like doing it," she said. It was true. She did relish the feeling that she was doing something to stabilize the lives of Matthew's children, who, it was plain, had always lived in a very uncertain and irregular way. Josie had only had one encounter with Nadine, which had been brief and disconcerting, but which had left her with the hope that Nadine would not be too hard an act to follow. "They're afraid of her," Josie said to Matthew. He looked doubtful. "Yes, they are. They're afraid of her moods." "I think," Matthew said unhappily, "that they love her." "Even if they did," Josie told herself, "it wouldn't prevent them from seeing how good it was to have meals at regular intervals and a clean, cheerful house and no rows." Rows, Matthew said, had punctuated his life with Nadine, sending China and children flying. Josie had been shocked listening to him. She and Tom had argued, certainly, mostly about Dale, but neither of them had ever thrown anything. It wouldn't have occurred to them. She would be very patient, she told herself, and not ask or expect anything in return for months. She felt, being in charge of the house and the family, that she would have endless patience in return for a power she never really had in Bath, where the ghost of Tom's dead wife, canonized by dying so young and so unjustly, pervaded the house. It was years before Dale would even allow Josie inside her bedroom. When she finally did, Josie was much taken aback by the number of photographs of Pauline. Nadine, by comparison to Pauline, was a most manageable opponent, a rotten mother, a lousy housekeeper. She never earned a contributory penny, and she was alive. Claire dropped three or four bulging carrier bags on the floor. They keeled sideways, and various discouraging and grubby garments flopped out. "Do you like it?" Josie said. "Those are your duvet covers and pillowcases."
"I don't remember them."
"I hope," Josie said, persisting, "that I've put them on the right beds. I put Becky's on the bed by the window."
"Becky won't sleep by the window. She only uses the window to chuck her fag ends out."
Josie smiled. "Sorry, I don't want her smoking in here." Claire trailed across the room, stumbling over the Greek rug and rucking it up. She looked at the pin board.
"What's that for?"
"Posters. And maybe paintings you do at school."
"In my year," Claire said, "we do pottery."
"Well, surely you've got some posters, haven't you? Pop groups and things." Claire stared at her.
"Becky likes Oasis. They won't fit up there."
"We haven't decorated the tree," Josie said. "Have we, Rufus? We left it for you and Rory to do." Her voice sounded false to her, like a parody of a nursery school teacher. She said to Rory, "Did you do a tree in Herefordshire?"
"No," he said. He wore, as all the children did, the same clothes he had worn for the wedding. He stood beside the boxes of Christmas tree ornaments and bags of silver tinsel, gnawing at a cuticle on one thumb. Rufus picked up the box of coloured Christmas tree lights. "These are new ones." "I know." He gave her a long, steady glance of reproach for having Christmas tree lights which were different from the white lights which adorned the tree each year in Bath. "I couldn't get plain," Josie said. She should have said truthfully that the coloured ones, bought from a Sikh trader in Sedgbury Market, had been the cheapest she could find. But she was not yet ready, she found, to admit economic exigency to Rufus. "These are common," Rufus said disdainfully. "Well, they're all we've got," Josie said. "Where's the telly?" Rory said. Josie pointed. Rory made as if to move towards it. "When you've done the tree," Josie said. "Come on. It's lovely doing the tree." It was too once, with Tom in charge, and tiny Rufus laboriously hanging things on the lowest branches, and even Dale, in the end, joining in. It was one of the few moments when Josie could feel that she'd been right to marry Tom, that it didn't matter that she couldn't love him, as she'd always hoped she would love a husband. Now, of course, that kind of love was easy. She loved Matthew. He made her happy and proud and pleased and in the best sense provocative. And this was Matthew's child. "Okay," she said to the boys. "Okay, I'll challenge you. I'll challenge you to take these inferior lights and all the other tacky things you so clearly despise and make something of this tree. Now I'm going to get lunch." From the floor, Rory said, "Who's going to look at it anyway?" "We are," Josie said. "You four children and your father and me. It's a Christmas tree for the family." The moment the word was out of her mouth, she wished she hadn't said it. Both children became suddenly and perfectly still. She bit her lip. Should she say sorry? Say, "My mistake"? She thought of those rooms upstairs, and the pasta ready in the kitchen, and the red candle because it was Christmas. Then something rose in her, something that elbowed out of the way her first feelings of apology, of needing to acknowledge her first failure at being angelically, superhumanly patient. "It's a word," Josie said. "Family is a word. So is stepfamily. And it's not just a word, it's a fact. And it's a fact that we all are now, whether we like it or not." She paused, then said more gently, "Come on, Rory, get up. I'll be 20 minutes getting the lunch. Then I'll come back and expect to be amazed." Neither boy indicated that he'd even heard her. Rufus, sighing, took the lid off the box of lights, and Rory bent to flick out of the nearest bag a skein of silver tinsel. Josie went out of the sitting room and closed the door. Rory dropped the skein of tinsel and ambled over to the television. "Where's the remote control?" he said.